south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, let's start today by talking about Bolivia. Here's some disturbing news out of La Paz, the capital. Turns out, socialist President Evo Morales says, unfortunately, after unprecedented growth of 5.5% in 2014, economic analysts are predicting a slowdown and perhaps a reversal, starting at the end of this year and probably into next year too. He said that this week in the wake of unparalleled street demonstrations, highlighting large cutbacks in social spending and proposed new taxes and increases in existing taxes. Unfortunately, he says, this all came as a result of the 50% reduction in oil tax revenues. So he's saying basically that the Bolivian people can only look forward to less government. Wait a minute, did I hear that right? Did he say less government? What's wrong with that? Let's have a party, huh? And in his closing statement says, all Bolivianos must get used to tightening their belts. In Spanish, ajustarse los cinturones. Now, you know, the problem with that is he and those government functionaries won't be tightening their belts anytime soon. Nope, that's not going to happen. It's always the little guy in the street, never the psychopaths in office. Though I guess we can always count on the Chinese to come in and save them, right? Just like they did Venezuela. You know, China just gave Venezuela, what was it, a $35 billion loan? They saved their asses from complete collapse for at least 6 months or so anyway. Of course, the Chinese aren't stupid. They've got the oil fields in Venezuela as collateral. Meanwhile, if you've been watching Latin American news, which you probably haven't, you'd know that Hugo Chavez's daughter has been named the second richest woman in all of Latin America. Hey, how'd that happen? Well, that's possible. I think she's got a home economics degree or something. Duh. Okay, that said, on a somewhat similar note now, you know that there are three Latin American countries that use the U.S. dollar. That would be Panama, El Salvador, and Ecuador. Now, even though the U.S. dollar is an unbacked piece of toilet paper, it's funny money too, Latins think it's the gold standard. So, it always seems to be a bit stronger and more stable than other Latin countries' funny money. That said, even though you occasionally hear a Latin country's currency appreciating against the dollar, it usually doesn't last long. That's why we're talking about Ecuador now. It has the U.S. dollar as its currency. And believe me, when you're in a Latin country that uses dollars, it seems very weird. Now, Ecuador has a border with Colombia, and Colombia uses its own funny money called the peso. And that's where the problems start. Now, Colombia just devalued their currency again, against the dollar, that is. When that happens, immediately the people in the country that are on the dollar, that would be Ecuador again, rush into the neighboring country, in this case, Colombia, and they start buying up everything and anything they can in dollars because suddenly, everything's much cheaper. And in the case of Colombia, it's 27% cheaper now than it was a year ago, if you're using dollars. So what happens then is that Colombian merchants, especially those along border towns, suddenly have an influx of dollars, making them very happy and momentarily wealthy, as everything starts flying off the shelves. Meanwhile, in Ecuador, the country that's on the dollar standard, their merchants, especially those along the border, experience a huge drop in sales. Meaning, right now, in the northern sectors of Ecuador, there's a grave financial crisis facing sellers, producers, and merchants. In fact, sales are down so much, especially in the two border provinces of El Cachi and Tucán, that the governor has gone in the media, television, and press, pleading with the public to act in a more patriotic manner by not going across the border to Colombia and buying their things, but to remain in Ecuador and buy the national version of the products. Yeah, right, like up in the States, buy American t-shirts and bumper stickers, saved U.S. Rust Belt manufacturing. Good luck with that, Ecuador. Now, in the local Colombian state of Ipales, the president of the Chamber of Commerce there, his name is Nelson Cano, he doesn't give a damn about Ecuador and is overjoyed at the prospect of all that new Colombian border town business. He says since the peso has been devalued 27% over the past year, car traffic from other countries into Colombia has increased by 16 to 20,000 cars a day, all of them carrying wallets and purses full of U.S. dollars to take advantage of the great exchange rate, which of course should be good news to all the expats and the gonna-bes and wannabes who are moving to Colombia and have some kind of income in dollars, pension, social security check, whatever. And by the way, Chile's peso dropped 7.8% against the dollar in that period, and Argentina's, as we know, was devalued about 34% in just 1 year. Now, if you recall, many times I've mentioned that international living and a lot of the retirement regs as such have been telling people to go to Colombia and Ecuador, specifically. Those are the latest big Latin American retirement hotspots, or they're supposed to be. And of course, if you've been listening to the Expat Files for any length of time, you'll know I've said that real estate has gone way up in those two countries, simply because they're on the international retirement map now, and gringos are flooding in with their dollars and Europeans with the euro. And it's true, in the last year, Colombian real estate has gone up from 15 to 20%. That's for both sales and rentals. But remember, we're talking about in local funny money, the peso. Meaning, if you're bringing in dollars, and in the last year, their funny money currency, the peso, in turn took a 27% dive against the dollar, in the end, it doesn't matter if Colombian real estate has gone up 20%. To people who have dollars, real estate in Colombia is actually cheaper this year by 5 to 7%. But that's only if you're paying in dollars. By the way, much of Colombians' real estate is priced in dollars. Though if they want pesos, you could always go to the bank and get the best rate. And by the way, in 2014, the Colombian peso was the world's fourth worst performing currency, right behind the Russian ruble, the Brazilian real, and, of course, the Venezuelan bolivar. That said, for now, Colombia could be a very nice place to work, play, and or retire, as long as you've got dollars coming in from an outside source. As one long-term expat gringo living in Colombia told me, he's got a bar, restaurant, and hotel. Unfortunately, he says, he has a local business that depends mostly on the peso. He's just been killed this year by currency inflation. Like he said, what am I supposed to do? Raise my prices by 30% year over year? For example, he said, if someone's booked his hotel 4 to 6 months in advance, he's automatically lost 10 or 15% because he's got to guarantee the price. And he said, his repeat customers are very pissed off. Ones that stayed in his hotel a year or so ago come back to find out the prices are a third to 50% more. Well, you think that's going to make them happy? Nope, he said, because of the devaluation of the peso, he's lost a lot of repeat business. Remember, he says the majority of his business is from locals who pay in pesos. Now, he said that doesn't matter a bit. To people coming from outside the country paying in dollars, they're always on the winning side of that equation. But unfortunately, he says, only about 5% of his customers are gringos coming from the U.S. and paying in dollars. So the foreigners are happy, but the locals are all pissed off. So then you might think, why aren't there more first world gringos if Colombia is such a hotspot with first worlders now? Well, he says Colombia may be popular with gringos, but not as pure tourists. Flying to Colombia for a week or two's vacation is not at all like flying to Mexico or Costa Rica, where you can get a package deal, air included, for under a grand. That's how he explains it. He says most of the gringos and Europeans he sees come down are actually looking to buy or rent, not your typical tourist. He adds, unlike Costa Rica and Mexico, Colombia is not a weekend or a week-long tourist destination for gringos. Just way too expensive. And he said, you always lose a whole day at the front and the back end of the trip because you've got layovers and connection flights, etc. Oh, and by the way, currency analysts are saying that the Colombian peso has got a ways to go before it levels out. In other words, they're predicting a couple of more percent drop at least this year. So what does that mean for you expat gonna-bes and wannabes? It's a good time to get your boots on the ground in Colombia. It's cheap right now. And here's a suggestion if you're actually thinking of becoming an expat there. Rent first for at least 6 months, even up to a year. Then wait for that real estate bubble to pop. However, to hedge your bets in case it doesn't pop for a couple of years, when you make that deal with your landlord when you pay 6 months or a year ahead, that's how you get your rent knocked down or get a free month or two, remember? Anyway, be sure when you pay ahead that you write into the contract that you're locking in the payment for a couple of years. So whether you're going to stay on or not, At least you've got the rent locked in. They'll do that. In other words, you're locking in a no rent increase clause at the very moment you sign the contract. That way, when the Colombian peso gets further devaluated, you won't get hit either way, whether you're paying in dollars or pesos. And believe me, all throughout Latin America, landlords are more than willing to put a no rent escalation clause in, especially for gringos, because they consider us valued, even golden tenants. We're the only ones who pay in advance like that. In fact, get ready to see your prospective landlord's eyes bug out when you pull out that cash and offer to pay 6 months or a year. Now, I've had emails here and there from people thinking that I must be exaggerating this point a bit because that kind of stuff is unheard of up in the States. Just to tap that point home just a little harder, allow me to read this email I just received recently from our friend, Captain Mango, who you probably remember from the last show was having his banking issues, being that he speaks almost no Spanish and he's not a resident in his country of choice in Latin America yet. So the banks treat him like, well, like a prospective international money launderer who wears a superhero's cape. And of course, that's due to all that pressure from government jerks up in the States. So just listen to this and judge for yourself if what I'm saying about the real estate bubble is exaggeration or not. And along the way, you'll get an idea how difficult it can be to do banking down here in Latin America if you're not a permanent resident. Thanks, of course, to the malignant U.S. government and their banking system. So anyway, this email kind of kills two birds with one stone. The joys of being at the very end of a real estate bubble and what it's like to do banking if you're a non-resident. And he starts by saying, "Hey, Johnny, here we go again with more banking fun. I had managed to get my landlord to reduce my rent from $650 a month to $600 a month by paying 2 months at a time. Now, that was a little over a year ago. Then, was further able to get the rent reduced to $500 after announcing I wished to relocate somewhere on a less busy street. Then, about 6 months later, I got him down to $300 a month by insisting I was unhappy at this location and wished to find a place where I would be able to do some gardening, and I threw in the fact that I was struggling a bit financially at the time. Now, because I'm a handy gringo, I'm the kind who will replace a faucet if need be. I won't call the landlord, which goes a long way with a landlord when you're trying to haggle a price down. I also must note my landlord is truly a wonderful guy who holds gringos in high esteem. And then, when the year was up, I thought to myself, why not try to tighten the screws a bit more? And I said to him, would you accept $3,000 for the whole year if I pay it all at once? Now, to me, this represents a savings of a cool $600 more. It reduces my rate to about $250 a month. Now, remember, at first, I was paying $650. And with that offer hanging in the air, he said, yes, that would be wonderful. So I wrote a check for $3,000 and we proceeded to the bank. I went with him to cash it. I know I'm saving him much grief by doing that, as the bank is very picky about anyone trying to cash my checks. Now, my landlord has had issues with these imbeciles too. To add further excitement to the mix, he unwittingly requested at the bank that approximately half of the cash be converted to the local funny money and the rest in dollars. Though inwardly I'm thinking, oh no, you Dick Cheney head. We'll never get out of this frickin' bank. But I remain calm and decide to ride this out because, you know, he does speak Spanish. He's a Latin and I don't. Of course, I have my passport handy and I'm asked to sign the bank of my check. Then the teller does some math for the split and figures so-and-so amount in U.S. funny money dollars and so-and-so amount in the local funny money. That's when a red flag went up in my mind, remembering a U.S. dollar check has to remain in their bank for 15 days before I have access to it, which makes my money stuck in dollars only until that time runs out. Well, now we are at the desk of another bank official. She views my passport, has me sign the check a third time, photocopies my passport along with my driver's license from the U.S. and my landlord's ID too. Of course, she can't authorize this gargantuan transaction without having another someone else at the bank type in a secret password. After all this is accomplished, a phone call must be made to the main office to clear this national debt-sized transaction. Meanwhile, my landlord takes a call on his cell phone, contrary to all the warning signs in and out of the bank. Now I'm thinking, oh mierda, now we're screwed. Predictably, an armed guard rushed over. All the while, I'm thinking of saying to my landlord, What are you doing? You live here. You should know better. You can't use cell phones in these banks. If this guy starts shooting, I can't help you. You're on your own. I've got my bulletproof superhero suit, and all you've got is that pirated Nike sweatsuit. That's when my mango vision alerted me to the fact that it was a rusty gun and he had no bullets. So I kept my cool and said nothing. Meanwhile, an entire hour had passed. Then the lady at the desk has given us a paper that will enable us to do the transaction as requested. She gave me a genuine smile and laid a few dozen unintelligible Spanish words on me, followed by those two quasi-English words that all Latins seem to know. Don't worry, which generally means the exact opposite. Then we were directed back to the original teller. Unfortunately, there was a line of people waiting to see that teller again. So as we stood in line another 15 or 20 minutes, our teller gets relieved by another brand new unknown teller. So we are faced with an unknown teller, not quite as bad as starting over, but close. The teller needs to see my passport, driver's permit, the paper authorizing the transaction that came from the desk 10 feet away, and the check. She then takes all this paperwork back to the desk where we just left. Both bank employees return to give us the stink eye. We have now passed the 90-minute mark. Money is counted in front of us four times and handed to my landlord, who counts it a fifth time. Slowly he counts it, oh so slowly, as he is in no hurry. For, of course, he is Latin too and has been programmed to accept, appreciate, and maybe even enjoy multiple lines and endless waits and mindless redundancies since birth. But wait, in this case, miracle of miracles, a done deal. The only redeeming factor I have is knowing I will not have to endure any more of this shit with him for another 364 days. And then 364 days from now, my goal is to learn 364 Spanish words. Nice, pleasant words too. I mean, come on, that's only one a day. How hard could that be? Easy. Back in Cleveland, I knew kids in junior college who didn't know that many American words. How hard could it be? Yours truly, Captain Mango. Well, thanks for that, Captain, and I'm sure there'll be more to come. Now, my take on bank situations when gringos are involved is that there are two different rule books for gringos and expats. One rule book, which is ever so strict and takes ever so long and is ever so frustrating, and that's when you're not a resident yet of the Latin country you're doing banking in. Like, for example, in the case of Captain Mango. And there's a completely other, much more lenient rule book when you're a resident, meaning you went through a long, drawn-out process and have that little resident ID card, which pretty much allows you all the rights and privileges of a regular citizen, except you can't vote. Big deal. Who wants to vote anyway? Just like in the States, if you vote, what you're doing is you're giving the thumbs up to a very corrupt system, and I have always preferred to vote with my feet. Thank you very much. For example, if you have a permanent or temporary residency card in a Latin country, you can go to a bank, open a bank account instantly. Well, maybe it will take 45 minutes. And then let's say you deposit $500. Well, since they have multiple currency accounts in most Latin American banks, you can leave it in dollars or the local funny money. Or divide it up, your choice. Then, for example, suppose at the end of the month, you need some local funny money to pay your water bill or electric bill, whatever. Now remember, unlike the US, Latin America is a cash-based society, so if you're out and about and on the street, little kiosks and tiendas and stores will mostly take cash. And since you're off the gringo tourist trail, the local grocery store, the tienda, doesn't take dollars. Well, in that case, you could go to your bank and let's say you want to convert $500 cash to the local funny money. There'll be no 15-day holding period because you are a resident. Therefore, different internal banking rules. However, if you do deposit a check from outside the country, there will be a waiting period. Could be up to 15 days. Anyway, if you're a resident and you've got an account and you want to change, let's say, $500 into the local funny money, you can't just walk up to the teller with the U.S. dough. Hand them your passport or your residency card and your bank book and say, hey, give me this in local funny money. Now, it used to be that easy up till about a year and a half ago. Now, what you have to do is hand them the $500, fill out a deposit slip. You'll deposit that $500 into your own bank account, passbook, checking, whatever. Then you'll have to fill out a retiro, which is a withdrawal slip. Calculate the amount of funny money you want to withdraw, And yes, they'll give it to you right away, kind of, because an operation like that will take about 10 or 15 minutes. Then you'll get your bank book back and you'll see you've deposited $500 and you withdrawn $500 in the local funny money. Pretty stupid, huh? But that's what you have to go through down here in Latin America now, since the U.S. government and first world banks have forced all third world banks and third world governments to sign FATCA and Know Your Customer laws. In fact, down here in Latin America right now, there are fewer and fewer banks allowing gringos who are not residents, that means you don't have a residence card, to open bank accounts, even with a lawyer as your co-signer. Though, luckily, there are still some banks that will allow you to do that. Not many, though. Like, for example, in the case of Captain Mango, often you just feel like strangling somebody. And by the way, a lawyer once told me, if you do strangle someone, make sure it's someone who doesn't have a nice car. Because, you know, the courts in Latin America treat wealthy people with a different set of rules than they do the poor ones. Okay, enough said about that. Now, a few odds and ends here. Remember, I was mentioning Brazil before as a country whose currency took a big dump this year? The second least stable currency in the world for 2014? Well, according to Latin economic analysts, Brazil is in its worst economic downturn since the 2008 financial crisis. That, added with the problem that the country's stock exchange has fallen 26% in the last year. The Brazilian real has plummeted 36% against the U.S. dollar in the past year, too. Brazil has the seventh largest economy, and it's the second largest iron ore producer. And the world price of iron ore has plummeted 70% since its high in 2012. Need more reasons to scratch Brazil off your list? Okay, here's an article that's of great interest that no one's talking about. It says, Bank of America stops wire transfers and U.S. dollar bank drafts to Belize. This process has ended Bank of America's association with a number of Caribbean and Latin American banking institutions. The move caught U.S. expats in Belize by surprise and threatens to derail many real estate transactions that involved wire transfers. So many foreigners in Belize are scrambling to change banks. However, the fear is that soon all U.S. bank branches there will follow suit. In other words, no more wire transfers to and from Belize. How do you like that? Bank of America calls this action part of a process of, quote, de-risking, unquote, believing that a lot of money that flows in and out of Latin America and Caribbean regions is tainted money. So the U.S. Treasury Department, along with the Caribbean Financial Task Force, can and do arbitrarily cut off banks they feel might be involved in money laundering. Now, the U.S. Justice Department maintains that the action is not targeting U.S. citizens living overseas necessarily. It's just targeting banks that handle tainted money. So the question is, who's next, huh? Oh, and here's a little piece of an email I got a while back and neglected to read. Now, this is from a guy who's been going to and from Colombia quite a bit. He says, Johnny, I've seen a few places boom over the last 20 years. Vancouver, for instance. They start out cheap, but in the end, they're very expensive. I see the same thing happening here in Medellin right now and all the big cities in Colombia. Part of how you find that out if you're not there for a long time is by people you run into completely by accident who tell you certain things. For example, one of the persons I ran into was an employee of Microsoft. He says he's scouted Medellin out and he knows just the right places that'll boom and he's certain to return with all his friends who will bring a ton of capital with them. And I know Medellin will boom because of other things that are happening there. For example, there's a new Four Season hotel, an Intercontinental, and a number of 4 and 5 star hotels in the works. High rollers need only apply, of course. All I could say, and you'd see it for yourself if you were down here a long time, is that the big money has found Medellin, the big international money, and I'm not talking about drug money. And if you're here right now, this minute in the country, and have dollars to invest because the peso has taken a big hit this year, you can buy in on what's left of the upward slope of the curve, but beware, in a couple of years it'll be so expensive you'll be priced out. So I guess that's when to sell. Though no one really ever knows where the top of the market's going to be or if there'll be a quick blowout. It's a good bet. It's time to get out if you can make 25, 50%, or if you're really lucky, 100% of your money. But is that where you really want to live when prices double? Anyway, if you come on down with dollars now, buy and hold, you'll surely do well. But look out. Don't put your money on today's cost of living. That's not going to last. Just look at Costa Rica. It's the blueprint for what's happening down here right now. Love your show. Signed, Larry the Loco. Okay, Lawrence, thanks for that. On a lighter side, remember in a show a long time ago I mentioned that there are tons and tons of Chinese restaurants down here, but nobody has fortune cookies. Well, I have to take that back now because I actually went to a Chinese restaurant. Now, I'm talking off the Gringo Tourist Trail now. And surprise, surprise, that restaurant served fortune cookies. But get this, you don't get them at the end of the meal with your bill and a couple of mints. You gotta pay for them. Two stale fortune cookies for a buck. Now, when you open them up, they're in a hermetically sealed clear plastic wrap. And being it's the third world, there's no expiration date, so who knows? Maybe they're months or even years old. You never know. And surprise, surprise again, the fortune's in Spanish on one side and English on the other. So they took my advice after all. I must have mentioned that 4 years ago now. And finally, someone's done it. But like I said, they've yet to give them away free like they do in the rest of the world. I don't get it, but that is a good marketing opportunity for expat gonna-bes and wannabes. Now, it's not like there aren't any commonly used particular products down here in Latin America that don't have fortunes attached. Remember I mentioned that there's a company called Saba, S-A-B-A, that produces feminine hygiene napkins that have fortunes on them. Well, predictably, I got some emails after that show, and people said, come on, Johnny, you're down in Latin America, and we're not. How do we know you're not pulling our leg this time? Anyway, what are you doing messing around with feminine napkins? I guess you got me there. Well, just to back up that story, I've got my hot little hands on one of those fortunes right now. Did I say hot little hands? Bad choice of words. Anyway, when you pull the plastic tab on one of these things, underneath is your fortune. I can only guess when a Latin lady's ready to use one of these things, she could use a little good news or some upbeat humor. Let me read one for you. It says, and it's all in Spanish, of course, you understand much more than you appear to. Be careful, your body language tells all. Take nothing but warm baths this week and you'll see the difference. The next time you're out, try going to the bathroom alone and not with a friend. Yep, ladies go in pairs down here too. Must be a gene for that.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.